Hi, and welcome to the Novel Ideas Podcast.
The Novel Ideas Podcast, a podcast about books by two siblings who love books.
Well, I moderately enjoy books.
Yeah, I have been known to read a book on occasion.
Although I don't know if I can read because I am a weak woman with a even weaker mind.
Oh, Gabrielle, there's a pretty good chance that you have a man brain. To go with your woman's heart.
Don't even worry about it.
Don't worry, little girl. You can handle it.
I'm like Mina Harker. Except I'm not married yet. I must find a good, strong husband.
Right, who undergoes trauma and then his hair all turns white.
Yeah. And he's really fucked up because then my maternal instincts will take over.
That's right. You will clutch his head to your breast.
Okay. So I'm Gabs.
I'm Ben.
And we're here today to talk about Dracula, the classic horror novel by Bram Stoker.
Yes, the classic horror novel.
Yeah, in case you didn't realize by our little conversation at the beginning, Ben and I have quite a bit of criticism for this book.
We love books, but we do not love every book unconditionally.
Right, and, you know, sooner or later we're bound to run into books that we don't love.
Hell, sooner or later, we may even run into a book that one of us likes and the other one doesn't.
That'll be a fun conversation.
That'll be a good week.
Before we get started in the discussion of the book, we do have a spoiler policy, which is to say that we spoil books.
We spoil everything. Every little detail. Nothing is safe. So if you're the sort of person who is bothered by that, then this would be a good time to tune out until you've read the book.
Although, I will say that if you haven't read Dracula, you might be better off listening to the podcast and just not reading the book.
That could well be true. Actually, I was just trying to think of a spoiler bomb, like we like to throw in at the end of that warning, and I can't think of one for this book. Like, everybody knows...
Quincy Morris dies.
Quincy Morris dies. Hey, newsflash, the guy who gets 7 lines of dialogue dies at the end. Like, anybody cares.
Americans should care because he's from Texas.
Because he's from America. He's an American in America. I mean, not in America. He's in London.
And he sounds like a British dude.
And he's... Yeah, I know.
Although, if you read Dracula, my challenge is anytime Quincy Morris talks, read it with a southern accent. It is hilarious.
It is pretty funny because it's an English gentleman. It's English gentleman dialogue in Texan.
Yeah. You're like, terribly sorry, good sir. I didn't mean to boot. And they're like, awesome.
Amazing.
Like I told Ben, Lee Scoresby, he is not. Spoiler for future book reading, possibly. Lee Scoresby. Anyway. Oh, I guess we should have done that before we started talking about Dracula.
What?
Listener response?
Oh, yeah, that's okay. We can mix things up a tad.
Mixing it up. This week we actually had multiple listener responses.
Hooray!
There are people apparently out there who have listened to all of our podcasts, or at least more than one of them.
That's right. We have literally more than one person who likes us enough to listen to multiple episodes.
So we just want to give some shout-outs to them and bring up some points that they brought up about The Giver, which we did last week. So first was Catherine, and she said that she remembered when she read the book, she thought that Rosemary was The Giver's literal daughter. She said, basically, I don't know, but maybe I wasn't that big into metaphors back then. And I was thinking about that, and I was like, well, when you're 12, I guess you don't really think in metaphors, and...
And it kind of makes sense. The book was written for a younger audience. Probably she really was his daughter, and we were overthinking it.
Yeah, and it makes sense that if they both have blue eyes, like, most of the adults in the community don't. So how else are you going to get blue-eyed kids?
That's right, because it is a recessive trait, even though it allows you to see beyond. Even though it's clearly superior to darker eye colors.
So anyway, I thought that was an interesting point, and maybe now I will think Rosemary's the Giver's daughter, although I'm still on the fence about it.
Yeah, and then Tony pointed out that in dystopian literature, you don't usually get to hear where societies come from. Where do these strange or terrifying dystopian societies emerge from? They don't really tell you how they get there. They just drop you into it and let you be scared.
Exactly. And Maria kind of followed up on that point by saying, you know, you don't know where they come from, but the fact that you can always see parallels between today's society and this new dystopia, for example, in The Hunger Games, like we talked about in that podcast, the reality TV aspect always makes you go, oh yeah, the transition to whatever this is actually probably eerily closer than I think it is.
Yeah, I mean, I think the point of writing a story like that is to say, hey, look how close we are to this really creepy thing. Maybe we should be careful. But, you know, that being said, I still do wonder where the transition occurs, because if we're so close to this, you know, 1984 Oceania society, how did we get there? Like, what, according to the author, was the key shift that sent us officially down that road?
I was also thinking about it and realized that most books that take place in the future are the human race has fucked up.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if we ever actually end up hitting utopia or social justice in the future in novels. It's always, people's greed fucked everyone up.
The possible exception of a Star Trek novelization.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, everyone, in like 200 years, we're going to be kaput, so I guess it's a good thing we won't be
around. So, might as well live it up. Go ahead and waste all the resources you want. Treat people like crap. Do whatever. All good.
That's our message.
Yeah, basically be the CEO of Exxon.
Something, by the way, that runs completely counter to the message of Dracula.
Yes.
Which is more or less be a good person. So why did we choose Dracula?
Well, it is a classic. So, lots of folks are familiar with it. Vampires are hot these days. And by hot, I mean in the zeitgeisty, not a word, sense, rather than the sexy, sexy vampire sense.
Although, also in the sexy, sexy vampire sense.
Though that does seem to be the driving force behind it because in many cases.
Because we do have The Vampire Diaries and True Blood and Twilight. And as one of our friends recently introduced to me, vampire romance novels, which I didn't know was a thing. Yeah. So apparently vampires are literally sexy, but not in Dracula.
No, not so much in Dracula. In Dracula, vampires are, well, they're the lady vampires.
Oh, they are. They're too sexy.
They're too sexy. Yes.
Which we will get into a discussion. Yes. Good point.
But the vampires who actually get to, you know, speak a little bit and like be a thing for more than a page. He's an old dude. As pretty much everybody knows at this point, Vlad the Impaler.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of direct historical references within the novel. If he's not the same dude, then he's his twin brother or something. So,
right, because at certain points, Dracula, which is his actual name, by the way, in the book. Which to a modern reader, you're just immediately like, well, duh, he's a vampire, his name's Dracula. Although you have to remember this book coined that name. But yeah, he's talking about fighting on the Transylvanian borders and being this, you know, how his people have this proud history of medieval lordship, which you find out is just him.
Right.
And for anyone who doesn't know anything about Vlad the Impaler, go read up on that, because it's pretty fucked up.
Yeah, though kind of a mixed, like a little bit of a mixed reception in history, depending on who you read, because he did actually repel some invading armies and was actually respected, I think, in the time to a degree.
Like most historical figures who have been vilified, You usually find out after reading a little bit into them that they're not all bad, because guess what? People are not all bad.
Right. Also, Dracula, actually part of his family name, as I discovered.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Yes, he's Count Dracula.
Yes.
He's probably like Count Robert Dracula. People call him Bob.
Bob. Oh, there's old Bobby Dracula.
Let's have a smoke with Bob Dracula. It's like, yeah, my cousin living in Transylvania is a total dick, guys. He's hanging out with Quincy Morris in Texas.
That's right.
Bob Dracula. Hanging out. Anyway, so Dracula is basically the classic gothic horror story, and as far as we know, is if it's not the first vampire story, it's definitely the most influential of the early vampire stories.
I can assure you that, according to Wikipedia, it is not the first vampire story.
Wikipedia, the paragon of fact-checking.
Of scholarship. But, no, I think the article I read referenced at least three other earlier stories. So I'm going to assume at least one of those is probably a real thing.
And there is obviously a tradition of superstitions about vampires in cultures all over the world, in Eastern European cultures, in, you know, the Middle Ages. They actually would have bodies that they would bury in certain ways so they couldn't rise from the dead. You know, bury them face down so they can't dig their way out of the grave, for example.
Yeah, not good when your corpses are coming back to life.
Yeah, so Dracula's definitely kind of the standard for the vampire story and a cultural icon, but vampires, or the fear of vampires, have been around for much, much longer than this story.
Right. So, what actually happens in this story?
Yeah, so the plot synopsis we came up with based on Ben's comments on the book, which you will hear about in detail, and my comments on the book, which you'll hear about in detail. The plot synopsis that I came up with was boring, boring, boring sexism, OMG vampire.
Which is pretty close to my version, which is boring except when it's frustrating. The end.
And we will definitely get into that.
Yeah.
So, one of the interesting things about the book, now that we just called it boring, maybe we'll talk a little bit about the interest so you don't just think we're just slamming it into the ground, because we don't hate the book.
No, it's not terrible. It didn't make me angry. It didn't, like, it wasn't full of things that I consider to be injustices presented as a good thing. It didn't have a character who was confused about himself for no reason for half the book.
Also, I will say that although there are large portions of the book that are pretty boring, there are a couple moments of suspense, a couple moments of pretty good horror. I thought the story of the ship sailing into the harbor with the fog and the dead captain tied to the wheel, that was pretty messed up.
That was pretty good, actually.
That was pretty good stuff.
Good little episode.
And I think the episode of Lucy as a vampire and her death, aside from the fact that I think they wait a couple days too long to do it, is also pretty interesting. So,
yeah.
When she's actually a vampire.
Right.
Her dying sickness is stupid, but so it's not like the book is entirely boring. There are moments, good moments in it. But the point of view and tense of this story, what's interesting about it, is that it's all diary entries, letters people have written to each other, telegrams people have written to each other, a couple of newspaper clippings. And so it's told entirely in a fashion of, you know, firsthand accounts of people. And at some point in the book, you find out that they typed up all their accounts and compiled them into a big old, basically, volume for themselves to look through. And so essentially, when you're reading Dracula, you're reading the record that these guys compiled and have been referring to themselves.
It's like the case of Count Dracula.
Yeah, it's a little meta, actually.
I don't even know what that means.
Whatever.
That's the running gag, anyway.
So that part of it is interesting to a degree.
I think some of the pacing issues come along with that, though, because there isn't ever just a narrative of something happening.
And one of the things going on is they're really careful to record every single detail because it might become important later on, like especially as you get a little farther into the story. Whereas as a narrator, instead of saying, oh, just traveling again today, just waiting it out today, you might say, over the next several days, they discovered the addresses and the important effects and went on their way, and just get it out of the way like in a paragraph.
Right. Now let's go drive some stakes through some hearts.
Yeah. And maybe it's partially just modern sensibility wants to get to the action faster.
Maybe. I think storytelling conventionally gets you to the action faster, though. I don't think that's purely a modern conceit.
There is the, I was recently looking at Kurt Vonnegut's rules of story writing, and he said that every sentence either needs to advance the plot or open up character insights, develop character.
In an ideal world, I would say yes.
But Dracula doesn't really do that.
No, there's a lot of filler.
They don't really develop characters too much.
It's a little, it's the old joke of the, what did you do today? Oh, I woke up and I brushed my teeth and then I had a piece of toast and, you know, proceeding to list every little detail of the morning instead of, oh, I had a crappy day because this person was a bitch to me. And I got in a fender bender on the way home from work. This is kind of the literary equivalent of that person who just gives you a step-by-step account of the day.
Right, and they're just going detail by detail through, and, oh, then I got attacked by a vampire, and you're like, what? Right. Burying the lead much? Hello?
I walked down the street, and I talked to a porter, and then I went to another street to talk to a guy whose name he gave me, and he said he was thirsty, so I gave him booze money. And then I went and talked to another person, and then I walked to another street and, like, 8 addresses and brief interviews later. And then I found the house where I was pretty sure Dracula lived, but I didn't actually do anything because it was almost sunset. So I had to get back home to see my friends who were busy keeping the women folk from doing anything.
Spewing some vitriol.
I can't help myself.
One of the things that I noticed, because this sets up a lot of the vampire lore, and some of it, current vampire books still fall, and some of it, they don't. For example, you know, Dracula's hair in the center of his palm, which is something that most vampires do not have, because that's pretty weird.
Yeah, I took note of that. I didn't know where it came from, though.
I think that's just a classic vampire trait that people don't write about anymore. I'm pretty sure. Some of the ones that are really classic are can't see a reflection in a mirror.
Which, check, you know, that's in there.
Yeah. Can't abide the smell of garlic.
Check.
Can't abide crucifixes.
Check.
Can't go into a house unless he's been invited into it.
Check, check.
Drinks blood.
Check, 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 check. Can't cross running water.
Can't cross running water is a traditional one. Oh, and he can turn himself into a bat. Yeah. Which is his traditional one.
Shape-shifting. A little bit of weather control.
Mm-hmm. And then one of the things that I was a little confused about is he can go out during the day, but it's when he's his weakest, so he typically doesn't.
Yeah, the sun doesn't turn him into a pile of dust, which is a little more recent. Maybe that's a Hollywood thing.
Uh-huh.
I don't know enough Hollywood history to get into that, but yeah, he seems to be okay during the day, though he prefers not to be out, it seems.
Once or twice they saw him in the afternoon, and I went, wait, what?
Can he do that?
But basically, they reached the conclusion that he's weakest while the sun is out, so he prefers to sleep instead. And then at night, he comes out when he's basically his immortal superpower form.
Right. When he's his grab bag of powers.
Yeah. So, I would say that the fact that he can't go out during the day, and he generally comes out at night, he basically follows that tradition as well.
Yeah. It's, I mean, when you think of the classical vampire, and probably, again, this is probably closer to early Hollywood than it is to the novel, I think, people's conception of that, but that's where the Hollywood part of it came from, is from this novel, I think, so.
Mm-hmm, definitely. I will say that Dracula is pretty erudite. I would have actually liked him, and I guess the purpose of this novel is not, like, look at this creature who's all conflicted, it's just look at this abomination. So Jonathan Harker can sense, to use a phrase from Stranger in a Strange Land, can sense the wrongness in him.
Yes.
Pretty much immediately. And I kind of would have liked it if he had blended in more, because it was kind of like, how does no one else realize this? This guy is obviously a bad person. Like, everyone's terrified of him. If you hang out with him and he touches you, you, like, feel your soul shrivel up. Like, how did he get away with this?
Well, the Romanian peasants seem to realize, or yeah. Hungarian, or Transylvania is both of those, I think. Yeah. I can never quite remember, but I think that's right.
We're part Hungarian. Respect your ancestors.
I do, blood-sucking sons of bitches.
The peasants are actually kind of come across as the smartest ones in the book, honestly.
I can go with that.
Because from the beginning, they're like, take a crucifix, take garlic,
right?
don't go on this particular day. And he's like, oh, ha, they're so superstitious. And it's like, oh, no, all of that is true.
Yeah. For that matter, towards the end, when they were back in Transylvania trying to hunt the Count down, and Mina was, you know, partially turned, at least, mm-hmm. and people kept making the sign of the evil eye at her or offering her garlic-laden food, which I actually thought was kind of funny.
Yeah.
That's really passive-aggressive.
They're like, oh, shit. Stock it up with garlic.
A vampire's coming for dinner tonight. I hate vampires. What are we going to eat? Italian.
Yeah. You take that clove of garlic and you put it all over that bread.
That's right. You put it everywhere. There's no escape.
You know what? I wouldn't have a problem with that because I love garlic.
I know. If that's the price I have to pay to keep vampires at bay.
Yeah, I always thought if vampires were really repelled by garlic, I would be in the clear. Because I'll go out and just be like, plate full of garlic. Delicious.
You don't even have to put it around your neck. You're just breathing in fire all night.
Although Dracula probably never would have attacked me because he would have been scared of me.
That's probably true.
He'd have been like, oh, she's not gentle and call me. She would, like he would come to the window and be like, can I come in? And I'd flip him off and be like, buzz off, dickbag.
Get away from my window, creeper.
I'm calling the police, idiot.
Or, oh my god, a bat.
Yeah. Shoot it.
Hitting it with a stick.
I'll be like Quincy Morris.
That's right.
Shoot it.
Though, maybe not aiming into the house when you're shooting at it.
Yeah. Can you, like, open the window and still not have technically invited him in, or...
I think so. Or at least at the beginning, when Jonathan Harker went to the castle, he opened the door but didn't actually invite him in. Like, he had to invite himself into the castle.
Oh, yeah.
So maybe if you crack the window, that doesn't automatically grant him entry. Especially if you're cracking the window to shoot at him.
Hey, I'm cracking the window to shoot at you, motherfucker. It's not an invitation.
Back off!
Also, I'm covered in garlic. I rubbed it into my soap.
I'm like sweating garlic right now.
So, we just went on a giant tangent.
All right. Are we doing a podcast?
Yeah, I mean, maybe pull back to the book. So we were trying to think of who the protagonist was. And as far as we could tell, there's not really one.
I couldn't pick one. Like, if you forced me to choose someone, I guess you get the most narrative from John Seward.
Although, Jonathan Harker is definitely the protagonist in the beginning narrative.
Yeah, the first about quarter of the book is nothing but his journals, pretty much. Which is unfortunate, because he is so dull!
I've actually told people before when they say they're interested in reading Dracula. I was a freak who read Dracula when I was 13. I actually don't know how I made it through the entire book. When I was 13, I did a book report on it, and my teacher was like, what the hell?
Who is this,
like,
girl?
Everyone else is reading, like, A Wrinkle in Time and The Giver. And I'm like, I just read 500 pages of Dracula.
What's up?
And everyone's like, what the hell? But anyway, when I was 13 and I read it, I actually remembered very little of the story. But the part of the story I did remember was that Jonathan Harker's journals were super boring.
He's going through one of the most horrifying experiences, just like full of terror that a person can experience. And he somehow makes it really dry.
Yeah, that part of the book could be so suspenseful. And there were a couple parts that were pretty good. I liked it when he realized he was a prisoner, and then he was, like, climbing into the chamber, and he tried to hit Dracula with a shovel.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool. Although I was having a hard time imagining, like, where he was climbing into and out of. But, I mean, other than that, I feel like that part could be a lot better.
There could be many more details about the scary stuff, and less about, oh, well, we had dinner. And then
we talked about
legal matters. We talked about law texts. Wow, that's suspenseful.
Don't even lawyers hate to talk about law texts?
I would assume.
Aren't they like the most boring thing ever written?
I've been to college. I've had some textbooks. I generally don't discuss them with people.
Maybe that's why Jonathan Harker is so boring. Because he's so used to reading law that he writes like it.
There you go.
It's actually characterization. Bam!
Wow, I didn't think he had any. There we go.
So Jonathan Harker's characterization is that he's a boring lawyer guy.
He's a boring lawyer guy. Who has a wife who is beloved, apparently.
Yeah, let's go talk about some of the other characters a little bit.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to save her for last anyway.
Yes, the women folk for last. Talk about John Stewart a little bit.
Well, he's not that interesting either. I think the events he describes are more interestingly described, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, he has, like, the running thread for him is he runs a lunatic asylum, so that's kind of interesting.
It is.
And they have this crazy dude, Mr. Renfield, who he keeps coming back to, usually just a couple paragraphs at a time. He's also the one who's primarily describing the events that happened to Lucy.
Yes. And I have to say that I spent most of the book going, what the hell is Renfield's deal? I mean, some of those details are pretty interesting, because this guy's, like, eating flies and spiders.
Yeah.
And at some point, he's collecting flies, and then feeds all his flies to spiders, and then feeds all his spiders to these sparrows, and then apparently eats all the sparrows.
Right. He was asking for a cat so he could feed all the sparrows to the cat.
Right.
So he could eat the cat.
Yeah.
Presumably.
So we assume.
Zoophagous.
Yeah, I love that term. Zoophagous. But, like, what the hell? Like, some of that was really effed up.
Yeah, it was really bizarre. Like, yeah, I can add to my life by consuming lives.
Yeah, that was really cool. And
that'll probably work.
And he kind of seemed to snap in and out of crazy, and depending on, you know, how close by Dracula was, he'd kind of snap in and out of violence. I mean, he was maybe the most interesting character, or one of them.
He was certainly in the top two.
Yes. Although, when his character's kind of resolved, when he finally gains back his sanity before he dies, he gets boring like everyone else.
Yep. Well, apparently that's the ideal English gentleman.
Being a good guy makes you boring.
Fucking boring. Sorry, any English listeners.
Well, we don't think current English gentlemen are boring.
I've never met a current English gentleman.
If you lived in 1897 and you were an English gentleman, then you were probably boring. But that means you're probably also a vampire if you're still around listening.
Yeah,
to this.
Sorry to any of our 130-year-old English listeners. unless you're like a 230-year-old English listener, in which case you're probably, I think of you more as Mr. Darcy, and you're vastly more interesting than the later generation.
And if you're like a 400-year-old English listener, then you were just a Renaissance pimp, so just get down with your bad self. And I hope you punch Henry VIII in the face for me. That's all I gotta say about that.
Yeah, if anyone out there has punched Henry VIII in the face, please drop a comment in the comment thread.
Let us know. We will do something for
That's
you.
That's right. Gabs will let you be a guest on the podcast.
Yeah, I'll give you a present. I also thought the deal about John Seward was, I thought he was a pretty bad psychologist. He didn't really,
know enough about the science and the art to know what state of it they were in 1897.
That might be part of it. As, like, by modern standards, he's treating his patients, like, really stupidly. Why would you do that? But he was more preoccupied with his dear Lucy.
Yeah, Lucy, who is apparently so awesome, and this was just farcical, I thought, and was proposed to 3 times on the same day.
Can you believe I'm 21 and have never been proposed to, and now 3 times in one day?
I can believe the first half of that, yes.
Yeah, I'm 24 and I've never been proposed to. I guess maybe I'd be an old maid.
I guess you would be. Well, you're not as old as Charlotte, so you're not Mr. Collins desperate yet.
Yeah. Maybe I could just pretend that anytime I got asked out, like 100 years ago, that would have been a marriage proposal instead.
There you go.
So I have been proposed to many times.
You said a kind word to me once. Will you marry me so we can touch hands like married couples?
No.
No, I don't want to hold your gross hand.
I would have been one of the I'd have been one of the new women. Like, fuck
that's
you.
Right, that's right.
You're disgusting.
You disgust me.
Let's talk about the other suitors that proposed to Lucy. So sure. We have John Seward, and we have Quincy Morris, who we talked about, I guess, a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, we really said what there is to say about him.
He's from Texas.
He's a Texan who speaks like an English gentleman.
And he proposed to Lucy, and we actually don't really know why.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, we hung out sometimes, and he joked with me, and somehow fell in love with me, so he proposed.
Of the men who are involved in this Dracula hunt, he is the last one to ever speak up, certainly. Though he is the organizer, as it turns out.
Yeah, I think he's, like, the most stealthy interesting. Because mm-hmm. in terms of just what's on the page, he's one of the least interesting because we don't know anything about him. But, like, the couple snippets you get about him being a good hunter and, like, organizing attacks, it's like, oh, man, if he had some more dialogue and sounded a little more Texas-y, he might have been a good old boy.
Yeah, I think the part of him that's supposed to show he's from Texas is that he has had this on-the-range kind of experience. He actually makes a reference to being in the Pampas at one mm-hmm. point. And I think we're supposed to think of him as a courageous frontiersman type of character.
I think one of the other guys calls him all man at one point.
Yeah, he's a man's man.
And he likes Winchesters, which apparently is very Texan.
Winchesters are badass, especially if you're a Texan in the 19th century.
So any Texan listeners we have who are 130 years old, apparently you're really cool.
Apparently you're amazing.
And you like Winchesters. And then the third suitor we have, who is the chosen suitor and the least interesting, least interesting background.
Right. We have no idea why he's the chosen suitor, because all we really see of him is his grief-stricken version, I guess.
Yeah, Arthur.
Arthur. Lord Godalming.
Yeah, and all we know about him is Lucy's in love with him for some reason, which she admits after talking about him for, like, a page.
I guess he's very sweet.
Yeah, he's really boring, so he's proper marriage right. material. And then he doesn't actually show up himself until she's practically dead. And then he's not really involved in the story until after she's died.
Yeah.
And at that point, he's all just, take my money.
Use my money to find Dracula. I'm gonna cry.
I mean, his wife, well, his to-be wife and his dad did die within, like, 2 days of each other.
Admittedly, tragic.
So, I guess maybe I would be a whiny little bitch,
maybe
too.
We're not being very nice here.
He should ovary-up.
That's right.
Everyone else was like, oh, Lucy's dead, that's sad, but, we're over it.
Yeah, I think we're supposed to believe that all those men were pretty grief-stricken, but they did have, like, within a week of that, there was some conversation where, oh, well, Arthur seems to be regaining some of his previous self, finally, was kind of the tone of it. It's like, dude, it's been a week!
Yeah, that was his fiancé.
And his dad.
Oh, and also Mina, like, gets a letter like, oh, lol, your best friend died. And she's like, oh, no, but Jonathan's upset, so...
Right. Oh no, poor sweet Lucy, but my husband has the brain fever. Which is a term I really enjoy.
The brain fever.
The brain fever.
Yeah, I will say that Mina's devotion to Jonathan was kind of nonsensical at some points. They're like, oh, we're so close and we talk all the time, but all the evidence you see is us both hiding things from each other.
Right? Also, we're so close, and we talk all the time, except only via correspondence, because the first, 3 months of the story, he's not even in the same country.
Right. He just writes her some letters. They don't really sound like him.
Yeah, apparently.
But she's like, oh, I kind of miss him. I haven't heard from him in a month. And I was thinking, like, if my fiancé went off on a business trip and it had been, like, 3 days and I hadn't heard from him, I'd start getting concerned. If it had been a week, I'd be like, where the fuck is this guy?
Right, well,
like,
even making allowances for the speed of the post
right.
in the 19th century, I think after a week, it's reasonable to start to get a little concerned.
And she seems to spend 3 months tolerably well without even, like, seeing or hearing from him. Maybe, I just think I'd be going insane by that point.
It's the principle of the thing. I think it's because there's no sex involved.
Well, that's true. She's too virtuous.
Exactly.
To want sex. Okay, the ladies in this story. So, Lucy Westerna and Mina Harker are both wonderful, virtuous ladies. And we know they are because all the noble, strong men around them think they are virtuous ladies.
And that seems to be the bulk of the evidence in favor of it, actually.
And Mina has a little bit more of a personality, but that is Lucy's personality.
Yeah, Lucy...
She's a sweet, gentle thing.
Yes, a sweet, gentle thing. She's got nothing.
Yeah, she's lame.
Don't care. Oh, she's dead. Well, I see that these characters are supposed to be really grief-stricken by this, but I don't care.
Yeah, she didn't defend herself at all. Like, she gave no reason why all these men should be violently in love with her. She wasn't that interesting. The sequence that led to her death, I think one of the things that made me not care about it was I was so annoyed with how it went down that I was like, fucking finally.
It was really...
I don't even care.
It was really drawn out.
Oh, and the people were so dumb.
It was borderline, again, almost farcical. Like, every night it's, oh, we need someone watching over her. We've done this to defend her from whatever this evil is. But by the way, we don't know what that evil is, except for one guy who won't tell anyone else.
Yeah, why doesn't he tell sooner?
I guess we kind of left Van Helsing out of the discussion of the men here.
Yes.
But the thing that initially, but probably was 200 pages deep at this point, but it was boring, 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 boring. Van Helsing shows up. It got less boring, but he sees the situation. He goes, there's something going on. He implies strongly that he knows what it is, but he won't tell anyone what it is, and no one asks him a single question.
Yeah. He's just like, just trust me. I'm using garlic. Okay. Just trust me. You have to do this. Okay.
And maybe John Seward, who was his student, knew him well enough to go, okay, I've seen the old man in operation. Here's what we're going to do. But wouldn't Arthur and Quincy, especially Quincy with his, no doubt, fiercely independent Texan spirit, be like, why are we doing this? Hey, you're doing something crazy. You mind giving me a one-sentence explanation?
Yeah, he just keeps going, you don't know what it is yet. You don't know what it is yet. You don't know what it is. I was like, tell them.
Just write.
And then it's like, oh, wait, but Seward is so much of a stupid dickhole that he sees Lucy's tomb empty one day and then filled the next day with, like ethereal, crazy, impossible beauty, not rotted corpse. And he's right. Like, oh, it's probably nothing. He's like, you stupid motherfucker.
He's trying to be so hard to be the healthy skeptic that he just refuses to believe anything.
And I mean, to a modern audience, like, right away, it's like, vampire.
Right?
Like, come on. I mean, the reason the story couldn't work today is I would walk into a room and I'd see someone with two pinpricks on their neck who looks like they were missing some blood, and I'd be like, fucking vampire.
Let's do,
like,
something about this.
Let's protect you.
Let's bust out the crucifixes and get to work.
And everyone else would be like, oh yeah, yeah, vampire.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Duh, makes sense. And then Dracula would show up and everyone would be like, kill you, bitch.
That's right.
We'd all lure him in with our sexy, sexy boobs and then kill him.
He does seem to like the ladies.
Yeah, at one point he's just, like, leering at this pretty woman in the market.
Right, like, he's leering at the woman, and Jonathan is glaring at the side of his head, like, so much so that Mina's afraid that Dracula's gonna notice that some dude is staring at him intensely, but apparently doesn't notice because he's too busy checking out the ladies.
Yeah. Dracula's, I guess, a ladies' man?
He must be.
I wonder if he and his, like, female vampire cohorts just, like, do it all the time.
I like to think they do.
Yeah.
That would never make it into the book, though.
Because they're pretty intent on a ravishing Jonathan Harker.
Yeah, those ladies seem to be pretty into the sex as well.
Yeah. It's like, you go, ladies.
It's like, we're going to kiss him. We want to ravish him. And the Count's like, God damn it, get back in your tomb, bad women.
And Jonathan Harker's like, I'm so repressed and so turned on.
I know.
Like, I'm loyal to my wife, but I've never felt the touch of a woman. Must have.
Must have more.
Sex.
Dirty women, get back in your tombs. How dare you want sex? Go, go.
Maybe if he and Mina had just banged before he left for Transylvania, he wouldn't.
I wonder how much more interesting he would be.
Look at these vampire bitches.
He's the classic profile of, like, the college comedy where it's the uptight dude, and everyone's like, he just needs to get laid. And then he does, and he's, like, party guy.
Dracula is a college comedy.
He's the uptight legal student.
Yeah, Mina's like some like uptight English major book nerd.
Probably from the Midwest.
Yeah. Lucy is also equally like virtuous, I don't know.
Yeah, right.
Music. I don't know what she would be studying. She probably wouldn't even be going to school.
And in this version of events, Van Helsing would be the liberal professor.
Yeah. He'd be like the crotchety old professor.
Who had like the like smoked weed and was all about free love like back in the day. And Quincy Morris would wander in. He'd be the loud friend who's just like, oh, you gotta relax, man. He'd be the one who would manipulate events so the two of them would finally have to have sex.
You're right. He'd
turn Jonathan Harker into the party guy.
Quincy's like making all these crazy things happen. And then finally he like makes it so that Renfield and Mina are alone in a room together. And Renfield's like, I'm going to eat a fly. And then Jonathan bursts in and Mina's like, let's do it.
Let's do it now.
Get me away from this creepy fucker.
Ah, shirt out the window.
In that someone obviously has to make that now.
It might be up to us.
Screenplay?
Or a Kickstarter project going for our Dracula college comedy.
Please leave comments and help us write this screenplay. Oh, right.
The women.
So yeah, Lucy, aside from being, you know, pretty much a big old bore, and all this stuff going on of the one night that pissed me off the most, there were two nights that pissed me off. The one where the mom was just like, oh, just throw all the garlic out and open the windows. I was like, no one fucking told you not to do that.
You have a doctor here, and he brought in someone from overseas for consultation.
Who brought in imported garlic.
Right, he had it shipped from, like, Antwerp or something.
Yeah.
And you're just going to throw it all out. Oh, stuff in that room. So I need to get rid of all this garlic.
I was like, God
damn. Woman!
Did I have a heart attack already? Stupid.
You wanted to shake her so she could drop dead and get out of the way.
Apparently her weak woman's heart. But then we also had the night where Van Helsing sent Seward a telegram saying, you know, it's super important you watch Lucy all night tonight. And then he tells Lucy, don't worry, Seward's going to be here to watch after you all night. And then, instead of waiting for Seward to show up, he just leaves. And then, when Seward doesn't show up because the telegram got waylaid, Lucy doesn't, you know, send someone out to go get him. She just says, oh, well, I guess I'll be fine. And then Seward's like, oh, I guess I don't have to go check up on her because I haven't heard anything.
Right, it's not like anything horrible has been happening to her every single night.
It's not like we had to give her 3 blood transfusions without any regard to blood type.
Oh, 19th century medical science.
Oh, God. So...
Oh, God, she needs blood. Quick, open your veins. Isn't there a missing step here?
What's... You guys...
Why is she sweating and shaking and even worse than she was? Her body's rejecting the blood?
No, as long as you have the heart of a noble man... then you can accept the blood.
That's the key, right?
Like when Van Helsing saw Arthur and he's just like, oh, he'll be a perfect blood donor. He's so strong and manly.
On sight. The face of a nobleman. Well, his blood must be amazing. Actually, as it turns out, he has 3rd-stage syphilis. Good job.
He's also full of incest and stuff like that. Because he's a noble.
And he's type AB negative. No one has that.
Idiots!
Fools!
Oh, wait, it turns out Lucy is AB negative.
What? Whoa! It just changes.
She's so perfect that her blood type changes depending on who's giving her blood.
I thought it was maybe just because she was so weak and womanly that whatever noble man's blood entered her veins immediately just dominated and turned the rest of it into the same type.
Oh. So in case you haven't noticed, there are some huge issues of portrayals of women in this book.
Yes.
And one of the things that happens throughout is we keep getting the strong, noble men and the sensitive, wonderful, virtuous women. And it's, like, to the point of absurdity, almost, at times.
Man brain.
Yeah. So Mina is praised. We are so lucky Mina was gifted with the brain of a man and the heart of a woman.
The brain of a man.
And not only a man, but an exceptionally gifted man. So you're saying that not only are women dumber than men, but they're dumber than dumb men.
Yeah,
basically. Like, not only the brain of a man, but of a smart man.
Yeah, I mean, Van Helsing, who's been brought in as the smart outside expert, as much as says, wow, this woman is actually probably the smartest person in this group. That's amazing. The only way I can cope with this is to compare her to a man.
Yeah, and Mina's the one who pretty much every time they're like, I don't know. She's like, oh, hey, I just figured it all out. And they're like, oh, you're really smart, but we're not going to tell you anything even though you just figured it all out because you're a woman.
Oh, that was so frustrating to me. They kept cutting her out of the loop. Her journal is a key component of this. She's typed up everybody else's stuff. Yeah. She has seen all of the information. And they're going, this is too sensitive for your delicate womanhood, so we're not going to let you see the new information because it's too horrible.
Yeah, she already knows, you know, how Lucy died and vampires, and like, how is the new information any worse than that?
She knows everything that's happened, and it was all horrible.
And the other thing was, they're like, okay, we're going to leave you behind and go investigate Dracula's house at night for some reason, which is
was confusing too, yeah.
The dumbest thing you possibly do. And then she's like, oh, I had this weird dream that this, like, bat figure flew into the window, and this creepy white guy, like, leaned over me, and I swooned. But it was probably nothing. I won't tell anyone.
And now I'm all pale and tired, like I've lost blood, and none of the men are gonna realize what's happening.
It took them so long. It was, like,
weeks.
Lucy, exact same thing just happened to Lucy. Like, exactly.
They literally just saw a woman have the exact same symptoms for a really extended period of time and then die and then turn into a vampire. And then they had to put a stake through her heart, which is kind of creepy because she screamed and frothed blood from the
lips. Yeah, that was pretty cool.
But here's the same exact thing happening to another woman, and she's probably just tired from all the emotions.
Yeah, she's probably just worn out from tragedy and women's feelings.
What?
Yeah. Okay.
Just leave.
Because they're freaking idiots.
I bet if you put her in charge of watching Lucy,
she would have fought Dracula off. Well, I mean, the couple nights when he was kind of already preying on her and Mina was there, she basically was the reason that Lucy wasn't getting attacked anymore.
That's true.
And then when Mina left, that was like when the really bad stuff started happening.
Also true.
Maybe Bram Stoker was sticking in a subversive message of, like, if you don't hold women in esteem for their intellect, then all bad shit's gonna happen to you.
Maybe he mentioned the new women just to make sure that everyone knew he knew who they were.
Yeah.
Even though what he said about them was not...
really rude.
Well, it was pretty rude, yeah.
But he was actually like, oh, Mina's my secret protagonist. He's like a secret feminist.
I could almost buy into Mina being the secret protagonist. I think you could convince me of that if you tried hard enough.
She really was more conflicted and more capable and more interesting than pretty much all the men.
Yeah, I did say when we were talking about this before we started recording that she's the deepest character. Pretty easily, actually, by a wide margin. Because you know how she feels about pretty much everything. She talks about emotions a little bit more in her journals, perhaps. She goes through more than anybody else, mm-hmm. definitely.
Yeah, she even gets to, like, turn a little bit into a vampire.
Yeah, partway there.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was interesting. And she's pretty tough, and she's pretty smart, and even though the men talk down to her despite that anyway, little girl... A sign of affection to call a full-grown woman little girl.
Apparently.
And
they're not even offended.
Right.
Which I would be like, face punch.
Just immediately. Well, it's like, it's a sign of affection. Like, it's definitely condescending, but it's a little creepy, too. Like, I feel like if I called a full-grown woman little girl, that she'd be less likely to go, you misogynistic jerk, and more likely to be like, do you like little girls?
Yeah. Hey, little girl, you want to go out on a date sometime?
Right. Would you like to lick my lollipop?
Ew.
No, I would not.
Never. The other thing that's going on with women here is, aside from the way they're treated, we have a pretty heinous representation of women's sexuality and how dangerous it is.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's the repressed Victorian thing going on anyway, where even men and women who are close to each other don't act like it a whole lot.
Uh-huh. And you have all the women vampires are incredibly sexy. And like we said, the Dracula women seem to be pretty into the sex. And Lucy tries to seduce Arthur outside of her tomb after she's a vampire.
Almost successfully.
Yeah, and one of the things that horrifies them so much is how voluptuous and sexy she is.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, that's not our sweet little Lucy.
Yeah, I think after they stake her and cut off her head, they're like, oh, the softness and gentleness returned to her face, and, you know, the red lips went away.
Right.
She's no longer a whore wearing red lipstick.
That's exactly what that is.
Yeah. So, basically, women, if you have sex, you enjoy it, you're a monster?
Wow, who would think that?
Oh, wait,
the 21st Century Republican Party.
Yeah, maybe vampire women take birth control, and that's why they're so horrible.
I bet it is. Oops, I meant not to get political on this podcast. Can't help myself.
Don't worry, Mina has a baby, so she's the perfect woman. Because everyone knows that it's women's end goal to have babies.
That's true. She finally did achieve that broodmare for the state status.
Yeah. And they name the son, because it has to be a son, because otherwise you couldn't see how virtuous she is.
That's right.
And a noble son. They name him after Quincy, of course.
It was implied he was named after everybody, actually.
Yeah, that was weird. But they call him Quincy.
Right.
Because Quincy's the one who died.
Well, yes, also Quincy's the one who died.
Which was, like, it was like Bram Stoker's like, oh, I have to kill someone, but I'm too attached to all these characters, so, Quincy's the least important.
Yeah, so here's how he decided to do the climactic final scene. There are a bunch of, I guess, gypsies.
Yeah, which, by the way, we know is not the best term.
Yeah, but Romanese, maybe? What did he call them in the book?
might have called them gypsies.
He did once, but he used a word that had, like, three consonants in a row, so I have no idea how to pronounce it. But at any rate, there's a ring of them, and they've been transporting it. The men are riding down this wagon to have their confrontation with Dracula, and they kind of bust through the ring of defenders with barely any effort. In fact, yeah. It was kind of mentioned in passing. At first, I didn't think anyone got hurt, but then I noticed that Quincy was clutching his left side, and there was blood spurting through his fingers. And then they wrench the box off the top of the wagon to have this final battle with Dracula, and they open the lid, and basically he opens his eyes, and then they stab him, and he's dead. The end.
Yeah, turns to dust.
Woo, what an exciting battle.
And then Quincy's like, I did my duty, and dies.
And dies, because I guess it didn't have enough significance if someone didn't die along the
way. That must have been, like, one of those, like, native people must have cut him open so bad his insides were falling out, because he died so fast.
Yeah, he did. They must have hit something important that carried blood.
He's, like, literally holding his insides in.
I guess. But yeah, he did. He went down fast.
One thing that kind of confused me about that confrontation is because everyone who's a native to that land is so scared of Dracula and so superstitious, I would have thought that they wouldn't have fought them off. Been like, oh yeah, we kind of got the sense that this thing was a horrible monster, so do what you gotta do.
Like, we were too scared to kill him. Maybe it was the thing where they were too scared not to defend him because they didn't think they'd actually be able to kill him.
Yeah, like, when they opened the box, he would kill everybody, so they're like, no, don't open the box!
Right, exactly.
Yeah, that would make sense.
So they were kind of fighting for their lives, or maybe they were just making enough of an attempt that they could claim they did.
Yeah. Yeah, we mortally wounded a guy, so...
Right, like, they were pretty much letting him pass through, and maybe Quincy just isn't a very good knife fighter.
Yeah, maybe one of them accidentally stabbed him.
Maybe he should have stood back with his Winchester and picked a few of them off and got him running.
Been a real Texan.
Yeah, that's right. Kill the indigenous people with a rifle and then take their stuff.
sounds pretty accurate. What I thought would have been interesting was when Van Helsing made it to Dracula's castle and he was killing off the sexy wrong females and placing all the wafers and doing all that. I thought, ooh, this is kind of an interesting scene. You know, it'd be really cool and suspenseful if someone showed up while he was doing that.
Yeah, like
Dracula.
Maybe Count Dracula.
You know, going out during the day because he's hearing the screams of these people, yeah. Or maybe even it's nighttime. I would have kind of liked to see a nighttime fight. If Quincy would have died trying to fight Dracula at night, and then the sun comes up and they manage to kill him, and I don't know.
It could have been a lot more dramatic, certainly, or more cinematic even, it might be the word.
Yeah.
Because you think of a Hollywood version of this story, and I guess there is a little bit of the tension because the sun is setting there at the end.
Uh-huh.
But you never get to see his full power on display during the night, where he's a strength of 20 men and humans just can't lay hands on him.
Yeah, I mean, he kills Renfield off screen, but
yeah,
that's about it. So,
oh well. Can't demand too much blood and guts from a 19th century novel, I guess.
And maybe we're just being too modern.
Yeah, maybe.
Because the other thing that chafed at both of us was this theme of the religious, good, morally, righteously right people and how it actually drove us insane.
Everything in the second half of the book was based on God is giving us power because we don't have selfish thoughts like this child-brained vampire. We have man brains, even this woman. She has a man brain. And man parts. No, just a brain. Just a man brain.
Just a brain.
Just a man brain.
I didn't like the description of Dracula with the child brain. I was like, this guy's been around for hundreds of years. Like, he would be smarter than that.
It's experience, if nothing else. Come on.
Like, and they keep, he's so smart and sly and powerful, and at the end they're like, but he's really a child, and here's all his weaknesses, so we can exploit them and kill him.
Yeah, God's not on his side, so that makes him less of a thinker, apparently.
Yeah, and all of them are driven to action by the mark on Mina's forehead.
Yeah, right.
Driven forward by her virtue.
You scarred her forehead. No, her pretty woman forehead.
Don't worry, it turns pale white and beautiful again.
That's right. Once we wipe out the monster.
Oi.
Let's talk about the technical merits of the book for a moment here.
Why don't you start, since you were complaining about the boringness?
Well, yes, the boringness of boring. The writing is pretty windy. There's a lot of stuff in there that doesn't need to be in there. I don't need every detail of every little trip and every little journey to find information. The dialogue is stilted.
Yeah, the way that I wrote it down was none of the characters say in 5 words what they can say in 20.
Yeah.
So when they're explaining something, they're not just be like, okay, he's a fucking vampire. They're gonna be like, well, I was reading all of this lore, looking at, and then 5 pages later, so he's probably a vampire. Some people call it a wampire, and then I was like, oh.
or if you're Van Helsing, you won't say in 5 words what you can say. Well, I can't tell you about it yet 500 times first.
Also speaking in the incorrect tense.
Yeah, that guy hates verb tenses. Maybe that's a Dutch thing, according to Bram Stoker.
Maybe that's the racism.
The racism?
He's like, yes. Dutch people can't talk well.
That's right. These white people can't speak English. They're weird.
But yeah, basically the main problem with the book is that it's just too much detail, and it could be a lot, if it was, you know, 200 pages shorter, I think it'd be a more compelling novel.
Yeah, I definitely think that. I really feel like you could tell this story. I exaggerated before when we were drawing up our outline earlier. I said I could write this story in 10,000 words and keep it interesting. Okay, probably that's an exaggeration. But you could probably tell this as a novella.
50,000?
I think so.
Solid. Someone could write it in November.
I think so. Yeah.
Nano. And the other thing that's going on is really long stories obviously don't bother us in general, since we just read Stranger in a Strange Land.
Which is longer than
but
this.
But you need to have compelling characters to carry you through really long stories.
Right. I mean, that's where in Stranger, that's where most of the interest comes from, actually, is the people are interesting, especially in the first about 2/3 of the book. But you've a classic all-time character in Jubal Harshaw. Whereas Dracula counters that with Abraham Van Helsing.
He's pretty interesting.
He's a guy with a bunch of doctorates. They're actually kind of similar characters in background, I guess, but there's nothing about Van Helsing that stands out, again, other than his hatred of verb tenses.
Mm-hmm. Mina's fairly interesting, but she talks so much about, everyone talks so much about her being virtuous, and she keeps thanking the strong men for helping her that she kind of gets tiresome.
Yeah.
And Quincy Morris, like, we think is a stealth badass, but we don't know anything about him, so...
You can't prove it.
No one... And Renfield's fairly interesting, but you never actually figure out what his fucking deal is.
Well, he's interesting because he's unstable more than because he's a well-developed character, right, though.
So overall, the characterization isn't just really strong enough to carry you through the lengthy story, and that ends up hurting it.
I'll agree with that. Okay, well, I guess we have touched on most of our relevant issues with this book already. Mm-hmm. Mostly that the genre is just going stronger than ever, if anything.
Yeah, I mean, horror novels, horror movies, and vampire stories are a huge deal. And if you're a giant vampire buff, you know, don't necessarily be afraid of what we just said. There are interesting parts of the book.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to really get deep into the lore of vampires, then this is a good starting point, I think. And again, it was pretty boring, but it wasn't a terrible book. Like, I read it.
And you can kind of skim some of the passages, which helps movie along a little bit. The other thing we thought is actually a benefit of the book is if you use it as a tool for learning history or, like, literary history, it works because it was written in 1897. You get this kind of Victorian sense from it, and if you were, you know, writing a paper or trying to teach a class, well, what did people in the 1800s think of women and the new women movement? You could read a couple excerpts from Dracula and go, this is someone at the time and what they thought, and that was a pretty common viewpoint, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, there are people who definitely try to, just through intellectual curiosity, try to collect classics. And
although, in the end,
yes,
I think that if you really want to read a monster classic and be just to be entertained by it, you know, because this is not the most entertaining book.
Now, I would not read this just for sheer entertainment. You're not going to get more sexy vampires out of this story.
So if you're just interested in reading an entertaining classic with a monster in it, read Frankenstein by Mary Shelley. The monster in that is a complicated figure who has a lot of valid thoughts. A lot of the stuff that goes on is pretty messed up. And it's only like 200 pages long. So she kind of cut to the chase.
Yes, I 100% agree with that assessment, by the way.
And one day we will probably review Frankenstein.
It's so somewhere deep in the bowels of our list.
So that's kind of our take on Dracula. You know, read it if you want to. Don't be entirely scared off. But if you're just looking for a good, entertaining vampire read, you honestly might be better off with a more contemporary book.
Yeah, something with some blood and guts and sex in it. So what are you reading right now?
I am reading Isabella, She-Wolf of France by the historian Alison Ware, who I know some historians dismiss as a more pop culture historian, although I think she looks at pretty legitimate sources, so I don't really have a problem with her. But Isabella is the princess from Braveheart, for anyone who's seen that, although in real life she was about 8 when William Wallace died and hadn't even moved to England yet. So, yeah, we'll kind of skip over that for the time being. But it's a new look into her and how, over the centuries, she's been viewed as a she-wolf and this horrible person for overthrowing her ineffectual husband, but how actually you can look at her pretty sympathetically.
All right. Well, I myself am still in the Codex Alera. I am now into the next book in the sequence, which is Cursor's Fury. And pretty much what I've said the last couple weeks, it's magic and stuff. And Rome. Lots of ancient Roman overtones.
I might have to read
it. It's pretty fun. I think you might enjoy it.
So with that, if you want to drop us a comment, like the wonderful listeners that we talked about at the beginning of the podcast, please come check us out and drop us a comment on novelideaspodcast.com.
Or you can email us at novelideaspodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure no one has emailed us yet, so feel free.
Yeah, feel free. I guess the comments get sent there.
Right, and if you want to interact with people, then...
Yeah.
Or you can contact us on Twitter at novelideaspod.
Just Novel Ideas Pod, no room for the cast.
So, we'd love to hear what you have to say, and for anyone who is keeping up with us and who is interested, we are reading A Wrinkle in Time by Madeline L'Engle for next week.
Yes, a book that I remember everybody reading between 5th and 8th grade, except for me.
Yeah, it's a super classic fantasy sort of story, and I loved it when I was a kid, so...
I'm looking forward to it.
There will be a lot to talk about, and I'm sure everyone's peeing their pants with joy right now.
So, I guess that's all, and we'll see you next week.
Bye!